Good evening, Chris. Welcome to the Space Show.
Thank you. Good evening.
Here at the University of New South Wales, I believe you're using the Navstar satellites. That's the satellites that can give us navigation and ranging information.
Yes, we've been interested in the use of this technology since the early 80s. We are interested in it for a number of reasons, and they range from all sorts of applications, that from the most precise to perhaps what would be medium to low accuracy end of the spectrum of users. Our interest was, of course, initially from the most precise, because we are in, this is a school of surveying, and some of us here are interested in the more precise part of surveying, which is the geodesy area. And GPS has been able to provide us with a very inexpensive, portable, very efficient tracking system that allows us to determine positions, relative positions, of ground receivers to a very precise accuracy.
So you've actually got receivers here on campus?
Yes, they're the geodetic receivers, like everything that is the most precise, tends to be the most expensive because of also the nature of the market. It's a really small market, a very specialized market. We ourselves, to do a GPS survey, as opposed to use GPS as a navigation tool, you need a minimum of two receivers. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when we were looking at purchasing our own receivers, these were priced at something like $70,000 to $80,000 each. They are now probably a half, if not one third, of that price. So what we hit on was to form a consortium with a number of other organisations. One of them was LIC, the Land Information Centre of the Department of Lands in New South Wales. The TAFE College, the tertiary and further education colleges, the School of Research, the Research School of Earth Sciences at the Australian National University, and ourselves. And we all chipped in and bought one receiver each. And the plan is, and has been functioning now for 2 years, is that each group in that consortium would have access to those four receivers for 3 months of the year for their own projects.
So presumably you're not just simply measuring where the University of New South Wales is, you're off out in the field somewhere doing some useful work with them?
Yes, I mean at the very right now, in fact, the four receivers have been sent up to Papua New Guinea to measure a number of points across the eastern part of New Guinea and New Britain, where there is a rather complicated geophysical, geotechnical area, tectonic area. We involve the intersection of a number of the tectonic plates, and what we are trying to do is measure very precisely some of the distances across the plate boundaries and compare them with distances that we measured a year ago and distances that we measured a year before that to actually measure the rate of movement of those plates. So one of our basic interests, therefore, is to apply these instruments to the measure of continental motion, crustal motion. They have been used in the past in Indonesia. They will be used again later this year in Indonesia to measure the same type of effect across from Christmas Island and Cocos Island to the Java, to see what is happening across the Java Trench. They have been used in a number of other experiments in Antarctica with other groups. So we are collaborating. We don't just carry out these on our own, of course. We are collaborating with international groups to coordinate our campaigns, and this is what they are, essentially, campaigns with others.
What about here in New South Wales?
Well, New South Wales, the Department of Lands, which is one of the consortium members, has almost completed the survey of the entire state, putting in a completely new network that has been fixed only by GPS. The intention is, of course, to make this network the backbone to tie in all of the other traditional surveys so that we have a more precise framework for mapping. They are involved in a number of other activities as well, and they relate to providing control for navigation as well and for other GPS users who will be coming online very, very quickly.
Anything else you're doing with them? Anything else that you're doing with them at the moment?
With the GPS receivers?
Yes.
Well, yes. The geodesy part, of course, has been the glamour part. I mean, it's the part that attracts our postgraduate students. I mean, the ability, you know, the challenge of measuring crustal motion, the challenge of measuring millimetres over distances of hundreds of kilometres, of course, is a tremendous incentive to do research work in a university environment. But it's very much a specialised task. Where the really exciting developments in GPS are is in the areas for which it was originally designed. Now, geodesists and surveyors are very inventive people. They've been able to wring accuracies out of the GPS system that were never, ever designed for. But the system is oriented towards navigation. In its standalone mode, you can go down to Paddy Palin's, sorry, I shouldn't be advertising, but you can go down to your local camping outfitter now and buy a GPS receiver across the counter for less than $2,000. You press the button once you take the receiver outside, and within seconds you will be able to get a position that is accurate to plus or minus 100 metres. Now, this is a tremendous revolution.
So you needn't be lost in the bush again.
Exactly. So this is why for recreation users, for yachties, suddenly people, well, very soon people will be putting them on their cars, will be able to know where they are to a level of accuracy that the average user, the general public, would never have dreamed of.
So if we're driving around Melbourne and we're a visitor to Melbourne, or if we're driving, as in my case here, driving around Sydney, GPS would help me out, wouldn't it?
That's right. I mean, this is an area, it's the commercial possibilities which are driving the development in this area, and I guess we here at the School of Surveying would like to be part of that exciting development work, not because it's commercial, but really because the number of potential users is much, much greater than in geodesy. Now, we cannot claim to be doing anything new. I mean, essentially what we are doing is trying to change our focus on the most precise end of GPS positioning to the less precise. Navigation, single receiver navigation that gives you 100 metres is at one other extreme. But there is a whole continuum, a grey area in between, going up to what we call differential GPS, which gives you 1 or 2 metre accuracies, and then what we call precise navigation, which sort of crosses that 1 metre accuracy boundary, which is where we're interested in working. We think that working from the most precise to the least precise gives us certain advantages because we understand the system in at a level of detail that no other group can work with. We already have, over the last few years, many experiments overseas where GPS receivers have been put into cars, have been coupled with CD-ROM and map display units, even synthesized voices, and this whole concept of the intelligent highway. GPS is really just one component of it. In fact, probably the least expensive component, because you can buy, even now, for only several hundred dollars, the core element of the GPS receiver. It's a tiny patch antenna on the roof and a cigarette-sized computer board. The challenge now is to tie it in with communications, so mobile communications, to tie it in with map display, tie it in with the CD-ROM technology that allow you to overlay your position to a map or to some other sort of features that you wish to interest. And it's this amalgamation of products, of which GPS is only one part, which is the truly exciting area.
So no more trying to balance the Melways on your lap while you drive around town.
No, I think we're several years away from that, but it's telling that in Japan, for example, there are several hundred thousand vehicles sold with GPS receivers. Now, I'm not sure what... They're probably not turned on. They're like cigar lighters. They're probably just an interesting accessory that is probably underutilized. In America, there's probably not more than a few thousand. But the ratio of the Japanese interest to the American interest is an interesting statistic. The European manufacturers are also working very, very hard, and I really do think that at the top end of the market you will see cars installed with GPS receivers. But to truly make them usable, you have to then synthesize the output in such a way that the average user can see it, either by a head-up display a map unit or even a synthesized voice that says that, you know, it doesn't tell you that you are at a such and such a coordinate, because many people don't understand what a coordinate means. But they would say, you are 100 meters from the intersection of such and such a street and such and such a street. And it's this transformation of the basic positioning information which is where the real challenge lies. There's only so much that you can do now with GPS. It's so cheap. It's available to all users. It's available to all small development companies. You can buy this basic sensor. The challenge now is to actually wrap it up into a product, of which GPS is only one component. And we here at the University of New South Wales are just starting to feel the waters in this area by taking our quite deep understanding of GPS and looking at alternative ways of providing this positioning information.
Well, thank you for joining us today on the Space Show, Chris.
Thank you, Andrew.